Meditation.
Depending on the quality of my mind.
You know, there's good days and bad days. And good days as well.
Feel like the waterfall of thoughts. And every now and then, a nice calm.
I can't think of anything.
This is Meditation in the City,
the Shambhala New York podcast.
And I am Dave, your host. Thank you for listening yet again. I care about you. I want to protect you. That did not sound sincere at all. see, just trying it on. You know when it's sincere and when it's not. That is the topic of today's talk by Dr. Shante Smalls, regular contributor to the podcast. What does it mean to really care for people and to want to protect people, to protect the community around us, whether it's the Sangha, that's a Sanskrit word for community of practitioners, or our community of people, our world, our cities, our planet? What does it mean to want to protect and care for our society, as opposed to just faking it like I just was a few seconds back? I'm glad you're listening to this talk. Dr. Shante Smalls gave this talk at our weekly Dharma gathering just a couple of weeks ago, and you're about to hear it. Visit our website, nyshambhala.org, for more information about all of our upcoming classes and retreats for the summer. In particular, we have our 7-day meditation retreat. It's happening in August, beginning August 18th, that week, those 7 days. It's a 7-day meditation retreat. You don't have to go away to the mountains. You can do it right here in Manhattan. And maybe that seems a little daunting to you. Maybe you've never meditated for 7 days. You can do it. And anyone who signs up, there is a free weekly Tuesday night series of drop-in sessions just for preparing for this 7-day retreat. Whether it's questions, getting a little practice, getting a little advice or talks from people who will be part of the staff of the retreat or who have experience doing longer retreats. If it's feeling a little like it's a little much, and that's natural, there's a lot of help. Not only during the retreat, there's always a lot of staff, a lot of people there to care for you, to protect you, but also this really cool idea, these weekly Tuesday night drop-in sessions for anyone who signs up for this retreat free of charge, to help you get ready for this week of meditation. And of course, you can also just register by the day. You do not have to do the full week of the retreat. So go to ny.shambhala.org for more information on the homepage. You can register and sign up for the retreat or any of our summer offerings. And now, here is Shante Smalls.
Many of you may have read about or heard about the 3 and more bodhisattvas who came to the aid of the 2 young black Muslim girls in Portland on the train, who were being threatened, their lives were being threatened by an older white man. And he had a very serious knife. And there are various reports and details of what happened, but 3 white men intervened. One was 22, I think, who died. One was 52. And the young man who survived was in his early 20s. And they offered protection and care for these 2 young girls who were terrified. And 2 of them lost their lives. They were killed by this gentleman. Slashed with knives, a knife. And the 3rd young man who survived was cut from his throat to, it just went on and on. And when we think about protection and care, I think we don't necessarily think about strangers, although we may. And they think about the kind of love, courage, selffulness or self-worth, dignity. It took for these men to stand up to such palpable and violent and deadly aggression. And, you know, that's what they did. And even though they lost their lives, it was not in vain. Now, we don't have to step in front of a knife or a gun in order to offer protection and care, but I give that example to say that it's a real thing that we can do in this world. We are not helpless in the face of violence, ignorance, aggression. And in Shambhala in particular, we talk about the practitioner, the meditation practitioner is constructed as a warrior, not just someone who sits on the cushion and feels good about themselves, although that's the ground is practice. I'll say a little bit more about that. But that this is about, in our conception or conceptualization, warriorship. And warriorship here not based on aggression or violence, but stemming from compassion. Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, who founded Shambhala, wrote in one of his books, I talk about this book a lot because it's so important to me, but also it was the first book of his I read. He talks about in Shambhala, Sacred Path of the Warrior, that the description of the warrior, he has many, but one of the descriptions that I love is that the warrior is clad head to toe in armor, except for the heart center. That the heart center is completely exposed. And so it's this protection and care is heartfelt. And yet we also have the skills or something we call warriorship. So someone said, the ground of being a compassionate warrior, or in the more traditional Buddhist parlance, a bodhisattva, someone who puts the enlightenment of others before oneself, one's own enlightenment, the ground is practice. Why do you think that is? Why is the ground of protection and care one's own practice? Any thoughts on what that might be? There's no wrong answer.
Just because it's where we see what we're made of. We see how far we've come or haven't come, where our difficulties are, where our courage is. Mm-hmm. In the world, and when we actually become who we are.
Lovely. If I don't have the experience of being friendly to myself, I can't actually be kind to others. It sounds so simple, but it is this almost, not quite, paradox that I can't, or maybe it's more straightforward than a paradox, but I can't actually generate something I don't have or don't experience, let's say, because of course it's about cultivating this experience of friendliness towards oneself, gentleness towards oneself. It softens your attitude toward the world. Now, that does not mean that you become a pushover or that you become so nice or anything like that, right? It's not, oh, I'm a meditator. I'm so nice. Everything's nice. But rather, we experience kindness, which is not the same thing as niceness. Kindness can look like, no, I'm not going to do that. Or no, you're not going to do that. But we, in order to get to that place, there needs to be some cultivation of one's own sense of who am I? What's going on with me? Where am I unkind to myself? So I don't know if any of you have ever had this experience on the cushion. Perhaps when you first started sitting, or perhaps now, or perhaps at some other point, and you just want to get it right, whatever that means. So maybe that's no thoughts whatsoever, and you go into a perfect state of you flatline. That's what you want. We want to flatline for our 5 minutes or our 10 minutes or our 30 minutes. Or we want to only have good thoughts. Or we want to not experience irritation or distraction. Or we want to sit, and then when we get off the cushion, we want to be transformed into an ideal person. We want to swap out who we are for the better version of ourselves. So that's a form of self-regression. And instead, what we ask of you, as people who are meditators or trying to meditate, is that we get to know ourselves a little bit on the cushion. We experience the discomfort and maybe the irritation of physical pain. When I was early in my practice in Shambhala, I remember one of the reasons I came to Shambhala in particular, I had been meditating in another tradition and I sort of stumbled my way here. And I had these thoughts. And they were, I thought, and they were about a particular person. And you know, in some contexts, when you say, I can't get you off my mind, it's a good thing. And in this context, it was a good thing too, in the sense that that's what I had to work with, but it did not feel good. And I would sit on the cushion here and at home, and the thoughts of this person and our situation would rule me. What if? Okay, I'll do this. What if I said that? Remembering things I had repressed. It was an ex-romantic situation. And I was in so much pain psychically. Like I've never experienced before or since, thankfully. And I thought that if I sat long enough and hard enough, if I meditated hard enough, that I would eradicate those thoughts. I would vanquish them. I mean, the abiding metaphor in Shambhala is a warrior, so I thought I would kill them. But this warriorship is about relaxation, gentleness, openness. And so my mind was so tight that the thoughts, when they occurred, had nowhere to go. You know, they just bounced. It was like being in solitary confinement. And what began to happen through practice, and this is over a period of, I'd say, 2 years, through practice, through study, through talking with meditation teachers, through retreats, it wasn't that I didn't have those thoughts anymore about that person, how I was going to show them, or anything like that. It was that suddenly, but it wasn't so sudden, there was more space. So the thoughts would arise, and instead of them kind of having 4x4, it was like they had this entire room. It was like a fly in this room, rather than in a cup. And so the thoughts would arise. I would see them or experience them. They would abide for however long they would abide. And they would, on their own, dissolve. I didn't need to wrestle them. I didn't need to tie them up. I didn't need to put them in a box. And I learned that by sitting on the cushion, I was offering myself protection and care. I was strengthening my mind. I was stabilizing my mind. My mind gained clarity through the practice of sitting meditation. And I noticed that off the cushion, I remember I didn't become nice, right? But I noticed that off the cushion, I was slower to act in my habitual patterns. At that point, you know, I really love to engage in the time-honored New York tradition of arguing with people on the street, arguing with strangers on the street. Oh, it felt so good. You know what I mean? Like, it just was like, oh, yeah? You know? Two of my favorite words. Oh, yeah? And I noticed that I began to be slower to do that. That didn't go away necessarily. Or when I engaged in those kinds of exchanges, it felt incongruent. It felt terrible, actually. Again, not because I was trying to be a nice person, but because that's just not, that wasn't the real me. That was a habit, a fear-based habit. You're not going to erase me with your behavior, strange person. I'll show you. And so there was a dissonance between the self I was getting to know and my habitual self, you know, just my lazy pattern of falling into aggression. So this practice of mind protection, mind strengthening through sitting practice, was my first real experience with protecting and caring. And it began to influence, even before I was conscious of it, how I worked with my own environment and with other people. I still had a lot of habitual patterns, I still do, a lot of neuroses, but there was it all seemed workable. Here, we have a lot of ways that people offer protection and care. The Tuesday night Dharma gathering crew sets up the room. Someone graciously brings me water. They even brought me some food earlier. They ask me what I need. They take care of me so that I'm able to manifest as the teacher. I don't have to get up and run around and bring you the mic or worry about the environment. They make sure that that's happening. And often in our conventional society, people who support or make things happen are deemed irrelevant or unimportant. Best supporting actress. But here we understand that we can't manifest anything without the people who make those things happen. And that's a practice. Remember, I used to be part of the Tuesday Night Gathering crew for, is it Tuesday Night Dharma Gathering? Or what do we call it now? Or we, okay, you know, the name has changed so many times. Weekly Dharma Gathering. I remember the first time I did water service for a teacher. And you get a little training. And I was so nervous. You know, I was like trying to pour the water, spilling it, you know. Nervous about being seen. Last year I was on retreat, a three-week retreat with Sakyong Mipam Rinpoche, and there's a whole training that goes into serving him. And you have to do something like 5 sessions. And usually that means you have to go to Boulder, Colorado, or Halifax to do those trainings. But since he was at retreat, we were able to do that. And I mean, you would think none of us had ever like put a fork and a knife next to each other before. We were all like, you know, they were like flying all over the place. Salt and pepper next to each other. How do you do that? I mean, this guy wasn't anywhere. He wasn't even in the building. And we're all like shaking and, you know, because there was a sense of tenderness and dignity and love. And it wasn't like, oh, I got to serve someone. It was like, he's given us so much. Let me offer this simple yet important aspect of care. And whereas that's maybe denigrated when we go to a restaurant and maybe we're deciding whether or not we're going to tip that person because maybe they didn't smile when we wanted them to, or our food was a little too hot or a little too cold. That is not under consideration. It's coming from a sense of, I appreciate you as a human being and as someone who's doing something for me that apparently I can't do for myself at this very moment, which is, you know, cook a meal and serve myself. And the dignity when you go to a nice restaurant or even a medium restaurant in which they set the table and the environment. And I began to notice that I was home. I didn't want to just eat out of a carton. You'll see this sometimes with Shambhala people where if we're having lunch or something, people will go and make a plate rather than just like... And that's not anything that's required or anything that's even put on. It's just from your own inspiration. And if you don't do it, there's no problem with that. It doesn't mean you're undignified. So we start with our own practice, and that begins to influence how we relate to the environment around us, whether that's our home or how we dress, other people. And I saw that for myself, that I was... Okay, I was in a groove and I was working with my mind and I was, you know, through sitting meditation. But I noticed that when I sat with myself, I was so amazing. I didn't have any problems with anyone. You know what I mean? I was like, the world is amazing. But when I encountered other people, I didn't feel that the world was so amazing. And I began to get curious about, well, if I'm doing this practice, how can I relate with other people? And I saw that part of the purpose of community or the Sangha is to be an irritant. That is to say, a mirror. So I began to get curious about my tendency at that time to find fault with other people. My own sense of control. Oh, if only they would do it. I know I'm only 2 years into this thing, but I know the right way to do everything. And I was like, and I knew from other experiences and other being part of other communities that if I meet 100 assholes in a day, I really just met one. Me. If everything is irritating me, maybe it's not everything else. Maybe the irritation is internal. And that my experiences in the world are touching that tenderness, that wound. Now, when people hear that, they say, well, does that mean no one can harm me or no one can... No, of course. Of course there's real harm, you know, the example I started with, right? There's real harm that happens. But I also realized that, let's say maybe 75%... of what I was characterizing as harm and irritation in the world was not external. I was so raw that I couldn't bear to be touched emotionally, right? I'm a New Yorker, so I don't know what I'm expecting, right? Like, not to be irritated, so I'll tell you funny. It's not so funny. Maybe it is funny. I don't know. I was coming here. I was fortunate that I was able to be home today in the AC with my dogs. And so I, you know, come out and I get dressed and I'm feeling, I have a little music in my head. You know, I feel like I have a little theme song. Come outside and it's beautiful and it's, the heat feels a little invigorating and it feels, and someone, I haven't figured out yet, but someone is, made this really sweet bench. Now, one of my complaints about New York is that there are not enough places to sit. So someone's made this really sweet homemade bench and put it outside. It may have been my super, it may have been someone else in the neighborhood, and painted it and put it outside of the building. And then they were like, please write on this and say welcome to your neighbors. And so people were writing various things. Jesus saves. I love you, you know, pride, right? It's Pride Month. Black Lives Matter, you know, dogs are awesome. I don't know what I read some of the things. People put some books in it. There's a little bookcase underneath. It was great. I was like, oh man, that's so, wow. Yeah, that's just basic goodness right there. And then so as I'm walking out, there's some characters in my neighborhood, right? And there are a number of people in the neighborhood who collect cans. And it's a very populous neighborhood, so there are a lot of cans to collect. So there was one woman who I see every day, and she had maybe 15 gigantic bags of cans, and she sat on the bench. And I couldn't... There was no room in the sidewalk. I couldn't. So I was like, excuse me. And then I was like, excuse me. You know, it like turned just like that, where I like went from being like open to like my storyline about this person came right back. Oh, here we go again. Rude. And then I just kind of caught myself. She was having a conversation with someone. Maybe she didn't see me, or maybe she did. I don't know. And it was this sense of my own bad behavior or thoughts woke me up. My own irritation woke me up. My own response to the environment. So it's not like I have to become someone who never is irritated. But what do I do with that irritation? Do I spread it around to the whole world so that everyone knows exactly how I feel? Or do I notice it, like I notice a thought? Because it is a thought. I don't want to be that person that people avoid. Even though I wish sometimes people would leave me alone. But when you choose to be a meditation teacher, you're choosing to not be left alone. I dare say when you choose to meditate, you're choosing not to be left alone. So I just want to read a couple of short things and then maybe have some conversation. So I was going to say more about this, but in Shambhala, I'm wearing this pin. So you notice sometimes the teachers wear pins, and they're all different kinds of pins, and they can be very fascinating or mundane or boring or whatever. And this pin signifies that I am an officer in the Dorje Khasang, which is a pillar of Shambhala, one of our pillars. So we have governance, we have practice and education, we have finance. We have Dorje Khasang, which is ultimately known as the military inside of Shambhala. And we also now have the pillar of social engagement. And the Dorje Khasang work with literally protecting space and protecting teachers, high teachers, so acharyas or senior teachers or the Sakyong or the Vijayadara when he was alive, other dignitaries in Shambhala and in outside of Shambhala. And sometimes you'll see the Khasang in the summer. They'll be wearing khaki pants and a white shirt and a blue blazer, and they maybe look like they work for Delta or something. In the winter, they'll be wearing gray pants. And if you ever go to a land center, this is sometimes where people have some cognitive dissonance, because we wear military uniforms in a land center. And the notion of the Dorje Khasang is that we are trying to work with transform forms. So the conventional military uses violence. The Dorje Khasang uses space, compassion, gentleness, in order to work with the environment. And there are situations, there's some Khasang in the room tonight, I won't call them out and embarrass them, but because they're not in uniform, but we're always on duty. And there are situations where it's just mundane and we do a shift and nothing happens and it's great and we're just sort of like greeters. And then there are real situations. Ones where we've had to tackle people to the ground and help them get to a hospital because they were a danger to themselves and others. So I'm just going to read our approach is very gentle, absolutely gentle, with good head and shoulders and good presence. This is very confusing for people because in ordinary situations, when we talk about the concept of a bodyguard, it means kill or cure with bulging muscles. Our approach is that the ladies and gentlemen of the Vajra Guard, as they were known before, are very impressive and good in their standing, literally speaking. When they open their mouths, when they connect with people, they manifest very gently and beautifully. That's a very interesting kind of weapon, if we can call gentleness a weapon at all. It's a communication system. So that was Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche in the 80s talking about the purpose of the Dorje Khasang. And two types of people are usually attracted to the Khasang. Those people who want to work with their sense of aggression towards themselves and others, and those people who do not want to work with their sense of aggression towards themselves and others. So I think with that, I'll open it up for some questions.
Hi. So I've been spending a lot more time with a particular partner than I'm used to spending. And I notice that I'm getting really irritated with stuff he does and says a lot. And I know it's me because it's like the stuff he's doing is harmless, you know? And it's not like I'm questioning my feelings for him or something, but I'm getting really irritated and I find myself like wanting to snap at him or mock him or, you know, but I'm not, I haven't done it, you know, but I'm just sitting there in my mind thinking about how I want to. And so great, you know, I've noticed it and I'm not acting on it. That's something. But like, what do I just keep on? I mean, like, I want it to stop.
You want it to stop. Can you call to mind a situation that irritates you?
Okay.
Right now?
Well,
don't tell me.
Oh,
just
okay.
Call it to mind.
All right.
Got it?
Mm-hmm.
Now, can you take that sense of irritation and wrap your heart around it? Can you tell me what it feels like to be irritated at this partner?
It's really scary. I'm afraid it's going to make me not like him anymore.
So some fear?
Yeah.
Can you just feel that?
Mm.
The tenderness of the whole situation. It's so hard to experience because we've been taught to run away from the tender heart of sadness, that that's going to get us hurt or in trouble or not what we want. And that if we just brutalize ourselves and others into behaving, we'll be safe. Mm-hmm. We'll be protected. So we're saying, okay, you can hold onto your armor, but just keep your heart unprotected. And what is that experience like? So we don't push our irritation away and say, oh, a good person, a good meditator wouldn't feel irritated. That's not, I've got to go to some, whatever that thing that comes to mind when we think, when we're being ungenuine. So irritation can be genuine. but there's probably something under it. So we feel irritation. Okay. Feeling the quality of the irritation. Urgh. What's the story with that? Oh, they always do X. I get irritated with my dogs. I mean, come on. Like, really? You know? But I'm like, ugh, you did a dog thing. And then there's like a little softening. And I can listen to it, I cannot listen to it. You know what I mean? There's always choice. And then there's a little bit, a sense of humor. And that allows maybe some wisdom to come. Because there may be a conversation that has to be had about patterns or behavior that's causing conflict. But that's different than doing that from a place of irritation versus from a place of gentleness. And we have to feel the irritation to get to the gentleness. Do you see what I'm saying? We don't just jump to we feel whatever we're feeling, right? And that softens us, and that softens us, and that softens us. And then we say, okay, I know what's going on here, or I think I do, is that I'm afraid. And it's hard for me to relate to this behavior, or whatever it is, because it brings up that fear.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You said that people who choose to meditate choose not to be left alone. Is that because the idea of befriending yourself, or could you say more?
Yes. Yes, so there's a sense of befriending yourself, of course. And naturally, without any kind of Western put on of what a meditator is or should do or should be, that sense of friendliness toward ourselves extends to others. And sometimes you're kind of like, ew, I want to keep it all for myself. You know what I mean? But the very act of sitting down and synchronizing mind and body and getting to know the quality of your mind in that moment or that day begins to change how we relate to our environment. We talk in Shambhala about we break out of our cocoon, out of our habitual patterns, out of our comfort zone. Not in a, I don't know why I just thought of Mighty Mouse. Okay, that's like so dated. But not in a superhero way, right? Not in a way of destroying ourselves or sacrificing ourselves. But we surprise ourselves because we begin to relate to ourselves and the world differently. It's a surprise instead of it being like a plan. And so because our heart is exposed, people see that and want to relate to us. Now, the way they want to relate to us may not be how we want them to relate to us, but that's an opportunity to also practice and see what's going on. Thank you.
I like what you're saying, and I think I'm following it. And I'm curious how you apply these principles to what we're all experiencing every day, taking in the news. So taking in all the feeling, all the frustration about what's going on with the government, et cetera, headline after headline. I keep asking everyone I know, how do you deal with it? What are you doing? Because I just feel like I don't know.
Yeah.
So can we take some of these principles that you're talking about and like, does it apply?
Yes. So how do you manifest this sense of what we call in Shambhala basic goodness? How do you experience this sort of basic inherent wisdom and openness and even cheerfulness in a situation that feels, for many people, despite who they voted for, feels violent and feels scary and feels hard and feels contentious. The good news is that these teachings are just right for this time, which is to say, when the world is speedy and unfriendly and confused, and we are, in fact, we could say we're being led by someone who seems to experience an incredible amount of confusion. Just from how he presents himself. We don't have to adopt confusion as a tactic, as a defense. We don't have to adopt helplessness as a tactic or as a defense. How you measure what you can or cannot take in is, you know, I think, individual. For me, I don't start or end my day with, and it's hard because I'm a phone sleeper, you know, sleep with my phone person. I try not to be, but I try not to start my or end my day with confusion, whatever that is. I may do it later or other parts of the day, but I try not to like have that be the first thing I take in and the last thing I taken. The other thing I've been saying, which is a little bit more glib, but I think is absolutely true, which is that if the world ends, I don't need to be on social media to know it. I'm going to know it. So you might try experimenting with taking in less. See what happens. One of the things, I don't watch the news on television, but one of the, even with the newspapers and news that comes on headlines, one of the things you notice, if you're trying to read a story from different perspectives, is that you'll read, say, 10 articles, and 8 of them have the exact same content. So, or if you watch, if you're in a, you know, when I'm at the gym, or if I'm at like a, you know, the airport, and they have CNN or whatever, Fox News or anything, it's a cycle. In Buddhism, we call that samsara, an endless cycle of suffering. And so, you know, they repeat the news throughout the day. So there's a little bit of the entertainment aspect of the excitement, and then we have something to talk about, and then the depression, and, you know, and then back to the elation. And so we might experiment with how much we take in. Not that we have to block the world out, but maybe, okay, maybe 8 hours is too much. Maybe I can go down to 6 hours. And you don't have to say, oh, I'm gonna, you know, try to practice with the hardest person for me. Practice with the easiest person. Start easy. Baby steps. Gentleness.
I found it very hard to come today. Mm. And I wanted to put that out there because the topic of protecting the Sangha, protecting the community, it feels like a lot of work. Mm. And then I come in and I feel like I was just pretending all day at work, to be the, I don't know, work-friendly version of Amanda. And to then come in here and feel like I can sync up my breath with the room. Mm. Lets me feel like this room can hold the real Amanda.
That's right.
And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that I feel like I can be angry here.
Yes, you can.
I can't, I'm not very connected with that otherwise. And I think meditation helped me find that kindness that looks like no.
Yes.
And I appreciated you touching on that in the beginning, but I find that a lot of the people that speak have this connection to the other side, mm-hmm. where there was a lot of irritation before, where there is now peace.
Yeah. Thank you. I always love a question like this because I think there's an experience of meditation and what we experience on the cushion, which is the whole range of human emotion and experience. And then there's the idea of a meditator and what a meditator should experience. But in this very room, we have a tanka in the back. Mahakala, the black protector. The wrathful, one of the wrathful expressions of enlightenment. And we have various Dungeons and Dragons type chants and practices. The Dorje Kassang in particular work with Mahakala, the Mahakala principle, that we work with what's called the four karmas. Pacifying, enriching, magnetizing, and destroying. And there's a lot to, the whole talk can be given about those, but the pacifying is the ground, right? We always try to pacify a situation or take our seat. And enriching has to do with authentic presence, authentic experience. So whatever's happening is happening, and we're trying to be with that. Anger, irritation, fear, confusion. It's usually not bliss, love, blah, 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 blah. You know, boredom, sleepiness, physical discomfort, hunger. We're with that. So we're enriching, right? We're experiencing ourselves and our experience authentically. Magnetizing is a sense of, you could say in this context, being together, coming here, not going it alone. And destroying is not obliterating someone, but it's like when a child is running into oncoming traffic and you say, no, stop. That is wisdom and kindness and compassion in action to prevent tragedy. That need not happen. And that comes through practice. Through sitting practice, through working with our minds, we're able to experience the wisdom that comes from spaciousness. And so, you know, I came to Shambhala, I have a martial arts background, so I came to Shambhala very clear that there are times when self-defense is needed. I didn't feel like, oh, it just, whatever happens, happens, you know? And so I think sometimes we get confused that because we're trying to experience synchronicity of mind and body, that that means peace. That is peace, synchronization of mind and body, but it's not always peaceful. It is sometimes we experience the storm of our mind, and it's the storm of our mind. It's the quality of it at that point. It will change. So we don't have to force another experience or an idea of an experience. And some people have very different orientations, or we could say karma, right? Where a teacher might sit up there and they have a very different experience than I have. But this is my experience, and this is the talk I'm giving. And I have a sense that people already think that they're supposed to be good. And I'm here to say we can be ourselves. So I hope that helps. So I want to thank you all for coming out.
Thank you, Shante. Thank you. I'm going to try this one more time. I care about you. Yeah. Visit our website, ny.chambala.org, for more information about classes and weekend retreats. Again, check out the info about our 7-day retreat happening in August, or any of our other summer offerings. If you happen to live in a different city, there's probably a Shambhala Meditation Center near you. Look us up. But if you are in the New York City area, come say hi. Visit us. Every Tuesday night is our weekly Dharma gathering at 7 o'clock, where you can hear these talks live and in person, and meet all the people whose voices you hear asking such great questions, and sample the cheese and crackers for yourself. Later.